jcc@yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
WPFW presents Genius plus Soul equals Ray and John. Tuesday, September 23rd, 5 a.m. until midnight. This will be a fundraising birthday tribute like no other, illuminating the lives and contributions of Ray Charles and John Coltrane, two icons of American music. Schedule and details at WPFWFM.org, where you can also contribute anytime. WPFW, preserving the culture, one broadcast at a time.
At 89.3 FM, this is member-supported WPFW, Washington.
To Community Watch and Comment for Tuesday, September 9th. I'm Jaina Parker, and I am solo again today, but my co-host Dave Raven will be back with us soon. Today, we are joined by Maryland legal aide Avery Shivers, the Equal Justice Works Organizing Fellow, and Safar Shah, the Advocacy Director for Human Rights to Housing. Listeners, we would love to hear from you, so please call us at 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Listen, we got a late start, so we're going to jump right into it. Thank you both for joining me today. Can you explain what Maryland Legal Aid is and how this organization supports the state, but specifically Prince George's County?
Jana, great to be with you and your audience today. So this is Zephyr Shaw from Maryland Legal Aid. Maryland Legal Aid is essentially a law firm. We're the largest free nonprofit law firm in the state of Maryland. We are a legal services corporation funded law firm, which means we obtain some federal funding to provide these free services, but most of it comes from the state of Maryland itself. And what we do with that funding is we provide an array of civil legal assistance to the residents of Maryland. Now, we're talking about the most vulnerable population in the state, folks who are 125% of the federal poverty guideline. So if you're talking about children's rights, family law, you know, domestic issues, healthcare, and of course, housing and workers' rights, Maryland Legal Aid does all of that. And we operate at 12 offices throughout the entire state. So we cover, for instance, last year, 65,000 intakes in the year to our hotline. And we provide representation. People need to understand, one big takeaway for this morning is it's not just brief advice. It's not like you're calling to just talk to somebody. We have lawyers who want to go to trial and really do the dirty work of economic justice.
Thank you so much. And I do want to make sure that I clearly articulate that while you can call in and speak to our guest today, please note that none of what our guests are saying today or during today's show should be taken as legal advice. But if you want to learn more about Maryland Legal Aid Services, you can go to mdlab.org or call their intake line at 888-465-2468. That's 888-465-2468. But if you want to call and speak to us today, you can call us at 202-588-0893. Thank you so much for just explaining that. But can you talk about, I guess, how the organization started a little bit and then the funding that you guys utilize in context to how you support the community? I think you're on mute.
Decades and decades ago, Maryland Legal Aid started along with, you know, legal aid societies across the country to provide legal services for poor folks and lower income folks. Our organization for a long time was the only legal service, like free legal services provider in the state. But we're no longer. Now we have partners in different parts of Maryland. You know, Pro Bono Resource Center started as an organization of private attorneys volunteering their time. There's Community Legal Services of Prince George's County, which also now operates in Anne Arundel County and Montgomery County. There are a number of sort of issue-specific or population-specific organizations like Disability Rights Maryland. We work with all these organizations. Because we have a lot of resources as a kind of a built-up organization over decades with all that institutional knowledge in our organization, we lead task force that bring all these practitioners from around the state together to talk about different issues, like I mentioned, like housing and family law, et cetera. And we are building out at this stage of our existence, we're really putting more focus than ever into the concept of community lawyering, being out in the community, not to do tables, fairs. Those things are important. But what I'm talking about is building relationships with people in the communities who are leaders in their communities, or they're just vibrant people who talk to their neighbors and want to connect those neighbors to legal services. That's part of the community development, part of being an asset at the grassroots level that I think legal aid may have gotten away from in the past decade or two. Certainly the bones are there. I mean, they're incredible. That generation, that kind of 70s, early 80s, even into the 90s generation of public interest lawyers, they are really the foundation of legal aid and legal services organizations around the country. So we are in that bridge time where those folks are retiring across the country. But we're bringing in new people, young people like Avery, but also young attorneys, to really take the torch and carry it on. And part of that is going to be being more embedded in community, contexts and being listeners rather than people who tell folks this is what you have to do because the legal experts tell you to do it. We need to hear what people want legal services to do for them.
That's good. That's a great point. Wow. Maryland Legal Aid provides a lot of different legal services, just so many. But you touched on housing. Can you speak to how you support renters within Prince George's and Montgomery County?
Yeah, it's a great question. This is Avery, again, EJW organizing fellow. To Zephyr's point just then, my role is, you know, a non-legal organizing fellow who really is on the ground supporting tenants, renters throughout Prince George's County, Montgomery County, and throughout the state, with their potential legal issues and their housing questions. I kind of see myself as a conduit between folks on the ground, the community, and some of our more internal staff. But as Zephyr mentioned, we're really aiming to ensure that we have a community lawyering approach in all the work that we do. Regarding how we support renters in the community, Zephyr mentioned, obviously, basic representation, right? We represent renters in proceedings, in evictions hearings, in cases in which there might be dangerous or unsanitary conditions in their unit. And that's where a lot of our time is spent and has historically been spent. But a real big practice area that we're developing now and really working towards is this community-based model that Maryland Legal Aid is dedicating a lot of time to and that I dedicate almost all my time to. So, thinking beyond just what we do in the courtroom, you know, we represent people in those situations, of course, but we also are in the field and we're on the ground and we're working with renters and community members. Our basic understanding of this is that, you know, those are the individuals who are experts in their community, right? They know what's going on. They know what their experience is. And our goal is to provide them with the legal information and the legal insight to what their legal rights are. As we said, that can be in relation to evictions and rent disputes or even conditions issues. We can sit down and do know your rights trainings with community members and with renters. But we can also connect with other community organizations to ensure that, you know, their networks are aware of our services, to ensure that in the state of Maryland, tenants know about their right to counsel and about access to counsel and evictions program, which basically provides, millions in funding to ensure that every renter who goes to rent court has access and ability to get a free attorney so that they can have a fair trial and clear representation. So that's a lot of what my work does in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. A lot of that on the ground work that I think we'll probably get a bit more into this morning as well.
I'll just add, Jana, that the housing crisis is really hitting these communities. It's kind of a crisis every year. But let me just say that there were 86,000 eviction cases filed in Prince George's County in 2024. There were 40,000 in Montgomery County. Really phased up the Access to Counsel and Evictions program now in its third year, provided representation in over 9,400 cases last year. So it's incredible. That's a really successful metric. But it's nowhere near the number of cases that are being filed. And still, only in Prince George's, 9% of litigants showed up to court. So what's happening with the other almost, 90% of people? They're out there in the community. We have to go find them. We have to help them feel it's worth their time. It's not fighting a completely uphill battle because you have an attorney to go to court with you. So that's part of the connection of what's happening in the courtroom versus what's happening in the community. A lot of people don't show up. They feel for decades. This is probably something that's happened to their family, their friends in their community for decades. They've seen that it's, quote, a waste of time to go to court. The right to counsel movement is meant to change that, flip that on its head. It should be worthwhile because you have an attorney, and there's dividends to be paid when someone is there with you, like a legal aid or a CLS is there with you in court. They can then continue that relationship, and they can see what's happening inside your home, what's happening inside your complex, what's going on across the street, and there's going to be legal issues, legal facets of all the problems that you see together. So that's the aspiration of it. We certainly, we do the tried and true work of litigating these cases, negotiating settlements, getting people rent reduced or getting the poor conditions of their homes corrected. But there's a whole other level of deep work that needs to be done. That's why we're talking. We're talking over and over again. Like, how important is it to be there with neighbors, be there with community members, because we can't get to that systemic level of change without that partnership.
mean, that's so important, and it's so vital to talk about just the interconnection between the residents, the issues, and making sure that they understand their true rights and things of that nature. It sounds like there's a lot that you guys do inside the courtroom, but there can be work that's done outside of the courtroom. So can you talk about that work that's done outside of the courtroom? And can you talk about the concept of the tenants' council? I heard a little bit about that in regards to just the eviction issues within the county and the right to counsel.
Yeah, certainly. I can touch on this. I think at the foundation of the work we do outside of the courtroom is this notion of community lawyering, right? It's the idea that lawyers should not be sequestered to the courtrooms. Instead, that they should be community members. They should be engaged with their community around them, because as we've spoken to already, that is what gets the greater outcomes, and it's what also ensures that folks know about our services and know about their rights, right? Knowing your rights, I always say this, you know, your legal rights are like a muscle, right? They're not nothing unless you exercise them, right? So if you know your rights, you're able to exercise them just as you are with a muscle. And so a lot of our work goes beyond just tabling, goes beyond just going to fairs. And as we said, those things are incredibly important. What our work primarily focuses on beyond that is property-based outreach, right? I've been in Prince George's County, working in Prince George's County now for about 2 years, and know the dozens of properties that are always filing evictions against individuals, always have complaints against conditions issues. And our real goal is to ensure that tenants at those properties know who legal aid and who other legal services providers are, and understand how they can access those services. And to be able to do that, we need to be out in the community, right? We need to be on the ground. We need to be talking with folks, engaging with folks, going to community functions, meeting with other community organizations, ensuring that folks know who we are. And once we get contact with those individuals and with those communities, and we build those relationships and partnerships and collaboration, it's primarily not only, you know, referral into our services, but it's also education, right? It's know your rights trainings. It's ensuring that tenants have an extensive understanding of what their rights are throughout an eviction process, to file a rent escrow case for poor conditions. And also importantly, to your point, Yana, how to form a tenant council as well. And I can briefly speak on this and what a tenant council really is. So tenant council, also known as tenant associations, or sometimes referred to as tenant unions, are coalitions of tenants at properties that basically organize themselves around their conditions and their property's issues. I like to think of them as kind of like a renter's voice in the property, almost like a renter's government in the property that really advocates for themselves, and works with and negotiates with the landowner and the property manager or the landlord, right? What's kind of central to this idea of a tenants' union is the idea that there's strength in numbers, and renters have a real ability to work together to get their needs met, and to work with the property management company to ensure that the property that they're living at meets their needs. And so not only do we work with existing tenant councils, right? We've collaborated with plenty of tenant councils in the Temple Hills area in Prince George's County and District Heights, also in the Mount Rainier and Cottage City area. But we also help tenant groups who are interested in forming tenant councils to guide them in that process and to inform them of what their rights are to do that. And depending on what kind of housing you're in, it looks a lot different if you're in public housing versus if you're in a Section 8 property or if you're in a LIHTC property, which is LIHTC. I'm throwing around these housing terms, but LIHTC means low-income housing tax credit property. These kinds of subsidies have different guidelines for what creating a tenant council really looks like. And so we really do help tenants to, when they speak to us, when they reach out to us affirmatively, help to inform them of what their rights are to create a tenant council and what the real purpose of a tenant council is. I think the one thing that you should take away from this, listeners should take away from the importance of a tenant council, is that it's a means that tenants can take, you know, collective action and organizing within their property to be able to negotiate and meet with their landlord. It's a way that tenants can take their housing into their own hands. And a lot of property managers and owners see tenant councils as being very beneficial to the property at large, right? To being a more productive property so that folks can stay in their housing and can have stable, affordable, and safe housing for a long term. And I'll pass it on to Zephyr if he has anything to add on to that.
Well, I think that, you know, what makes the tenant council important is that it's the backbone of creating more rights. There are two ways, I think, of looking at how do we build the rights of tenants, this increasing population in this time of unaffordability, economic slowdown, and all that. Well, there's the vantage point that we need to legislate more rights. Well, you can't effectively legislate in Annapolis without a constituency. The constituency needs to be these grassroots tenants councils, these folks who are impacted person led, who are living in the buildings, who have the proximity to the issues, and through their organization, their collective effort and power, they can influence legislation in Annapolis. But there's another vantage point, which is that they can just as well be creating the protections and the contractual rights that legislators can create. And a good example of this is good cause eviction. Now, we've policy advocates have been fighting for good cause eviction literally for 8 straight years and going back even farther. What it is just the concept that tenants who follow all the rules of their lease, including paying their rent, should have the right to stay in place. They should have the right of renewal of their contract if they want a renewal. But what we have in Maryland and in many other states have this is, living in your apartment is at will. It's like at will employment. The owner, the landlord, the management company gets to decide whether, based on advantage to them, not to you, whether to keep you in place. And this means that many people are uprooted from their community, the place that they want to be in, their place of choice, the place that's proximate to their healthcare, their school, their place of worship, their friends, their family, etc. And it can happen, obviously, within 60 days of a notice to quit. So good cause eviction is really about the equity that renters should have. And we'll keep fighting. You know, everyone's going to keep fighting in Annapolis for that. But what could a tenant council do? A strong tenant council, a tenant association in a building could come together. And there are ways. You know, we have to imagine. We have to look at the horizon and be kind of visionary about this. There can be ways for them to negotiate with their landlord collectively to win in their contracts a good cause provision. So that's just one example. When we talk, like the hottest things in Annapolis last year around renters' rights were things like stopping AI price fixing software in the rental market. Tenant councils can be a part of that. They can force their landlord to stop using those softwares. Things like junk fee transparency, having disclosures in the leases about what fees are going to be charged when. Again, tenant councils can force their landlord through negotiation to be transparent or even to scrap some of those junk fees. So I think there's a real nexus there. People don't talk about it very often. But, you know, whether it's mobilization of the tenant councils or it's negotiation, collective negotiation, bargaining, those are going to be the things that kind of on the horizon for tenant councils. Going just back to the roots of it, it's just so important to meet with your neighbor, to have a relationship with the people on your floor, on all the floors, in the common areas. It is really like every building is a community. And there are so many reasons why people don't do that connection. Fear is one of them. The stress of living in that community, the alienation of people being favored by management versus not being favored by management. So when legal services comes into the picture, I think it can be galvanizing. It's not the only thing that needs to happen. That person-to-person connection is a big part of it.
Can you go into how the person-to-person connection strengthens like a community's ability to change their situation?
Yeah. And Avery, feel free to jump in here. But I've been doing these housing cases since 2011 when I was a baby attorney. And I can't tell you how many conversations I had with a client facing eviction or living in just inhumane housing conditions, who had never talked to someone on their next door, someone on their floor, about whether they were going through the same experiences. When you are atomized, like you are just an individual versus that company, that landlord, it is so easy to defeat you. The whole legal system, the adversarial legal system we have, is really so set up to look at one person and their issue in a silo and deal with the very, you know, the particulars of that case rather than looking at what's going on all around. You know, how do you get a landlord to turn the heat back on in a building when they've provided you, the one person, a space heater? And there might be a judge out there who's persuaded, well, you have a space heater, your issue's okay. But you know, if you talk to your neighbors, they might also be having the same heat issue, the same cooling issue, the same mold issue. That's when you really see the power of just familiarity with your neighbors. If you already know that it's a problem for multiple people, then you can talk about the legal issue as though it connects with multiple people. And there's more to the resolution than that individual kind of quick fix solution. The same thing goes for accounting problems are such a big problem for low-income renters. Just the way that predatory accounting and fee practices affect them. But when you see it, you see your ledger, you see what's happening with the balance that gets emailed to you, whatever. It's overwhelming. But now when you know that there's people all across the building who are in the same boat, again, there's a sense of relief that you're not alone in it. And then when you also see that, well, someone did fight back, someone did have a lawyer, someone did have success, that also becomes not just relieving, but it gives you a sense that there are options here. There's a place to exert your own power.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. Okay, cool beans. Hey, caller, can we thank you for joining us today. Please go ahead and tell us where you're from and go ahead with your question.
Hi, I'm Lily from Hyattsville, Maryland. I am 80 years old and I need help in writing a will. I cannot afford $500. But I am willing to pay. I also have been caring for a cousin who's bipolar 20 years with me without any benefits of any help. And he's sometimes not able to control himself and he's not violent, but verbally abusive. And at such a late in life with my having heart problems, I find it to be very difficult to have cohabit with this individual any longer, and I have to get some benefits and arrangements. I need
No worries. Thank you so much for calling. You can reach out to the intake number. I'm going to give it to you right now. It's 888-465-2468.
I wrote that down.
Yes. If you call that number, they'll be able to help you in context to your questions.
Also, I want to know if they can help with disability for this individual who needs help medically, and $200 with a month of Social Security. A 70-year-old man cannot survive out here in case something happens to me. And so I just wanted to know if you handle disability qualification and for individuals who are bipolar, who have been diagnosed, who take self-medicate and all that stuff. Does the legal aid assist with those things too?
First of all, I just
want to
say I can
hold on. I was just going to say that there are organizations that we work with that specialize in disability. And one of the one that operates across the state is Disability Rights Maryland.
Right.
Maryland Legal Aid does help with issues around healthcare access, but reasonable accommodations in housing. I think that we often refer cases to Disability Rights Maryland because they are the statewide disability legal services provider.
Is there any phone number I can contact to discuss my case with them?
Yes, it would be the number that you just said on the call.
Okay, mm-hmm. I'll discuss. Thank you so much for your time and your effort and your good intention and your goodwill for people out here who are stranded. Good day.
Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in. That is just a microcosm of just how important that that it is for the Maryland Legal Services legal aid to be here. Also, just to that caller, you can call 410-235-0748. That's 410-235-0748, and that is the Disability Rights Maryland organization. Thank you so much for calling in. I did have a question around, we've been hearing a lot of talk in the public about taking public property and privatizing it, calling it RAD or conversion of property. Can you talk about that process and how it affects our community?
Well, RAD is just the latest, I think, the most popular right now version of this issue, which has been going on since disinvestment in that first generation of public housing in the United States. The concept is let's not get rid of affordable housing that exists completely. Let's just make sure that the government is not responsible for it. And so what you have with RAD is a program, and this goes back to the early 2010s, where housing authorities like Prince George's own housing authority can essentially contract with a private developer and create this mechanism where the ground is held by the housing authority, but the building is operated as though it's a private property. So you'll have private operators, for instance, like Wynn Residential or Penrose Management, operating the building, doing everything the landlord does, and they sign up to do this with there's sort of the reward for the state or the county is that company is going to spend money to rehabilitate the property. So it's essentially like a public, the concept of a public-private partnership. There's cost sharing here that fills in for the fact that there is very little capital investment funding coming from Washington for public housing to reinvest in public housing. And Avery's been really tied in with, on behalf of Legal Aid, with the five properties in Prince George's County for which the RAD conversions are starting.
Yeah. So, you know, as Zephyr mentioned, this is a nationwide trend, right? We're seeing that because the federal government has not invested much money at all in the public housing stock, that these public housing properties have deteriorated over the decades. And, you know, the federal government sees RAD as an opportunity to preserve affordable housing, you know, by sustaining subsidized housing through Section 8, usually, or through the low-income housing tax credit, or through project-based vouchers. But as Zephyr said, the primary distinction there is that it's oftentimes managed by private companies, right? And so that was an important thing to mention for what this means for tenants in these buildings. Now, in Prince George's County, this trend has kind of continued, and it's continued throughout the state or throughout the country, but also in Prince George's County, we can see it pretty live and clear. There's five public housing properties, along with a few other isolated properties in Prince George's County, right? Those properties, and you all very well might be familiar with them, Cottage City Towers, Kimberly Gardens, Marlborough Town, Rolling Crest Commons, and Cottage City Towers, I think. And Owens Road, sorry, thank you. And so those are the five properties that the Housing Authority of Prince George's County has basically slated for conversion from public housing property to Section 8 through this RAD conversion process. Now, there's a lot to first mention in this, is that tenants have a lot of rights throughout this process, right? A lot of their, at least in the federal regulations, right? They have a right to return to the property. A lot of the rights under public housing are preserved following the conversion. But the larger thing that we often see is that, you know, these places need to be renovated, right? They need to be renovated, and tenants can't be in the property while it's being renovated. So let's say I'm living in a public housing property in Prince George's County. I got to move for 24, 25 months while this property is being renovated by the Housing Authority. Now, the Housing Authority does ensure that folks have relocation and have relocation assistance, but the efficacy and the speed at which that relocation plan is delivered is something that we've, and our partners on the ground, our tenant leaders and tenant partners, have really experienced as a true challenge to the RAD process in Prince George's County. So, for example, you know, if for folks that are in the, you know, Cottage City Towers area, this is all public knowledge, of course, and we're hearing this from the Housing Authority specifically, but the Cottage City Towers community, which is in Cottage City, Maryland, is the first property of the five in Prince George's County that is slated to be converted from public housing into a RAD property. And this has been in the plans for quite a while now. It's been several years, and our tenant partners have experienced the ups and downs of this process. But really what the real challenge is with this is that, you know, there's an estimated timeline of roughly 6 months before the tenants will need to move out. But tenants have yet to get a relocation plan at Cottage City Towers, right? They don't know where they'll be for that 25-month period of construction. And so, you know, having spoken to some of the tenant partners this morning and having worked with them for months now, that's their primary concern. You know, where will they be going in the interim before they're able to return to this new property? And what requirements do they have to abide by before they're able to return to that property? A lot of the RAD provisions ensure that tenants have to be in quote unquote good standing to be able to return. And so that raises a lot of questions for tenants, a lot of concerns about, you know, will I be able to access this unit, this place that I've lived for decades, right? Following the conversion. And just, you know, big picture, bird's eye view, like these are public housing, just to break it down for folks, is government owned, government funded, and government managed properties, right? They were established in, you know, like the 1940s, 1950s as a real government-funded solution to a housing crisis and to a lack of affordability. These units are deeply affordable. And most of these units are occupied by folks who are extremely low income, a lot of folks who are disabled, and other folks who are senior citizens. So these are some of the most at-risk populations in our county, right? And mind you, a lot of these folks, you know, couldn't live in Prince George's County if they didn't have this kind of housing. They've lived here for decades. Maybe they were, you know, pushed out of Washington, D.C. at some point because of, you know, a lack of affordability in the city. And now they're facing, you know, a question mark about, will I be able to come back? What will that look like? Will I be able to move back into this unit? Will I, you know, in the meantime, when I get relocated, you know, will I be able to access my doctor, my community, my family who live in Cottage City? These are big questions for folks who are in that property. And for the other four properties, right? Like I said, Marlborough Town, Owens Road, Kimberly Gardens, and Rolling Crest Village. These four properties are also, according to the plans of the housing authority, slated to be redeveloped as well. And so a lot of tenants obviously are probably aware of this process, right? There hasn't been any suggestion that they're going to be demolished, right? They will be renovated according to the plans. At this moment, that's all we can say, but there's a lot of uncertainty that comes with this process. This is kind of where legal aid comes in at this point, in that, you know, our role in this is to ensure that tenants, you know, understand, what the rights are of those residents throughout the process. And legal aid also is oftentimes notifying tenants for the first time or for a subsequent time of the process actually taking part. And that's, you know, a real reason why we're so lucky to be on today's show is because we want to make sure that tenants know about this process and know about their rights throughout this process and know how to access legal aid, community-based services to be able to find that support if necessary. So, you know, that's kind of the breakdown of RAD in Prince George's County. If you, you know, have those questions, obviously you can call in now, but obviously you can reach us through that centralized hotline and also through other means as well.
Thank you so much for breaking that down for our residents and breaking down the issues. I know that we have about another 10 minutes, and I wanted to give you guys the opportunity to really go in depth into the issues that renters are facing within Prince George's County, within the legal systems that you're seeing on a regular basis, and that, you know, can be readily addressed through renters' councils.
Well, I think the most significant problem we see every day, as kind of like dumb as this sounds, frankly, I mean, it comes down to unaffordability. So many legal problems cascade from the fact that rents are too high. Now, Prince George's County enacted rent stabilization. And here's why it's just so important. More than half of Maryland renters and renters across the country are cost burdened. So cost burden means that you're paying over 30% of your income towards housing. This statistic came out this year from the National Low Income Housing Coalition. The average one-bedroom apartment in Maryland requires a $33 per hour wage to afford that one bedroom. But the average renter is earning $22 an hour. So that gap in what's affordable means that tenants across the board, this is the state of existence for renters, is having to manage trade-offs, having to get by just barely as long as possible and hope that you're not going to have to pay for a funeral. You're not going to have to pay for a surgery. you're not going to have some other accidental or incidental thing happen that caused you to fall behind. What happens when you fall behind? This is where the legal process starts, because fees get tacked on. You're summoned to court. Now, you may not have been summoned properly. You may not have been able to go to court that day because you're working, you have family, et cetera, responsibilities, et cetera. Now there's a judgment. There's more fees. If you were in the position to have to move, now that record on that court record is so easily publicly available that now it hurts your chances to get other housing. So just that whole issue is then magnified by the fact that in Maryland, it is still, I mean, although this has changed in the positive direction recently because of the governor's work on this issue, it is still so easy to file and so relatively cheap for the landlord to file these eviction cases in court, simply not to remove you, but to collect the money under threat of eviction, that 1 month of falling behind and going to court then becomes another and another and another. This is called serial filing. This is why some of our clients present to legal aid having been sued for eviction 9 out of the past 12 months. And the way our law is set up, when you have been filed on that many times in 12 months, you start to lose rights. So you can now have your right to stay in the property, to basically pay after judgment and cancel the eviction because of payment. You can lose that right because you've had more than 3 judgments in a year. Well, frankly, most low-income tenants in Maryland are going to have had more than 3 cases filed against them in a year. You lose the right to file a rent escrow case. Rent escrow is the accessible way for tenants to sue their landlord in district court, you know, the people's court, to compel the landlord to actually do what they're supposed to do and maintain the property. So you pay, you're asking the court to allow you to pay your rent into an account to reduce the rent in light of the defects in the property, and then hold the landlord accountable. Say like the court saying you cannot have any of the money back until you have shown that you've repaired the property. And you don't get to do that as a renter if you have more than 6 judgments against you in a year. So this is just an example of how the legal system is set up against renters to really, unfortunately, magnify the initial problem, which is that you fell behind for some sudden reason, or you lost your job and you haven't been able to get a job in this job market we're in. The problems that I mentioned about accounting are also one of the most typical problems we see. And again, I should say that over 90% of eviction cases are related to the allegation of non-payment. So that 86,000 cases filed against Prince George's County renters last year, 84,000 were non-payment of rent cases. So many of these cases involve the tenant not knowing what they really owe because the accounting is so hard to understand. Even their access to accounting, with all this stuff being tied up in property tech apps, like these prop tech platforms, Yardie, Rent Cafe, whatever they call it these days. People are having to access this information online. They may be too old for that. Frankly, they might have a disability. They may not have the access, the digital access, but they're being forced to do that. And so it's just one more level of inaccessibility to the disadvantage of the renter. We spend a lot of time just going through the numbers, the math, trying to understand why rent is being misallocated to things like amenity fees, legal fees, fees even added for the landlord's responsibility of fixing and maintaining the property. These are called work order fees. I mean, they have trash fees. And then on top of that, utilities. And, you know, there's always disputes about why the utilities, particularly multifamily properties, where people are portioned a certain charge for the total energy consumption in a property. there's always problems for tenants in understanding why they're being charged a certain amount because they don't control the amount. So it's completely outside of their control. It's up to the management company. That's called ratio utility billing. So those are some of the key issues we see in rent cases. But of course, we also see the habitability problems that we touched on earlier. We have so many properties where they're affordable to our low-income clients because they're in bad condition. And the business model for these landlords is to defer maintenance long enough to make a profit on the property. And when they can no longer squeeze the tenant for rent in a property that is substandard, then they start to look into, can they transfer the property? Can they sell it? And then someone else comes in and the cycle continues. So rent escrow, which we talked about, is a big piece of correcting that, but it requires tenants to pay into an account or ask the court to reduce the amount that's paid. It is a pay-to-play system. In 2024, the Tenant Safety Act was passed in Annapolis, and this was the first overhaul of rent escrow in decades. And what it put into play a couple of benefits for tenants. So one, it creates a presumption that the rent should be reduced. It creates a presumption. These are the legal term that basically it's the landlord's burden to show why this shouldn't happen. So there's a presumption also that the amount to be paid into the account should only be prospective rent, like the future rent, not any allegation of back rent. Those are the big hurdles, the financial hurdles that keep tenants out of court on this issue. But then the biggest thing was that tenants can now win attorney's fees and the costs of litigating the case. It's up to the judge and their discretion to award that, but this was unheard of, okay? This was a major win that was won by organized tenants who came to Annapolis. The last thing about this is the multi-plaintiff rent escrow action. So this creates the ability for the first time for multiple tenants in the same building or the same complex to come together in one lawsuit and file in the district court. So, you know, landlords lobbied against this bill and said, this is a class action and class actions are unfair to companies, and save that for the circuit court. The circuit court's much more difficult process for renters to operate and navigate through, the district court less so. And so what the Tenant Safety Act created was a way for tenants to file together in the district court and go through that more accessible people's court proceeding together. That reduces the fear level, the fear of being targeted and retaliated against. It also brings into play that systemic conditions are at issue that require systemic resolution, rather than that individuated stuff I was talking about before, where you can have one person's case gets resolved, but there's 15 other tenants whose cases are not resolved. This is the way to try to resolve it for everybody at the same time. So I think those are the most prevalent types of cases. We see too that on the horizon, we are going to have to really be looking at what's happening with subsidized housing, with those vouchers, because what is coming down the pike in Washington is work requirements, other requirements to get people off of housing subsidies. So whether that's project-based housing, or vouchers, there's very likely going to be a spike in households, losing that help. And then evictions will follow. So, I expect that to be a big part of the equation next year.
Wow. Thank you so much. So thank you for just the time that you've taken in context to this. That'll do it for today's show. Thank you for joining us, Maryland Legal Aid, Avery Shivers, Equal Justice Works Organizing Fellow, and Safar Shah, Advocacy Director for Human Rights to Housing. You may contact our guests with any additional questions by emailing them at ashivers@mdlab.org. That's ashivers, A-S-H-I-V-E-R-S @mdlab.org. And again, that'll do it for our show. Thank you, Mike, for your engineering expertise as always. Thank you for keeping us straight and on the level. And coming up, don't forget the blues with the fabulous Lady Murr. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
United Black Community presents the 21st annual The Love Supreme, a musical, poetic birthday tribute to Netaru John Coltrane, featuring the NASA Abaday Quintet, Cindy Brown, Kenny Carroll, Nana Malaya, and more on Friday, September 19, 2025 at 7 p.m. at eLife Restaurant, 9033 Central Avenue, Capitol Heights, Maryland. Details, UBC and DC at yahoo.com, 240-832-7203. Thank you.
Award-winning former police officer and criminal justice adjunct professor Garland Nixon hosts News Views Fridays at 6 p.m. Tune in to hear a refreshing angle on today's state of affairs and other issues other media intentionally overlook. Find the episodes on iTunes Podcast and Google Play Music. Only on your station for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM, Washington.
WPFW presents Genius plus Soul equals Ray and John. Tuesday, September 23rd, 5 a.m. until midnight. This will be a fundraising birthday tribute like no other, illuminating the lives and contributions of Ray Charles and John Coltrane, two icons of American music. Schedule and details at WPFWFM.org. where you can also contribute anytime. WPFW, preserving the culture, one broadcast at a time.
What's it do if you're approached by the police?
We deserve to be safe in our neighborhoods.
Follow these tips to assert your rights.
If you're being stopped, detained, or arrested, the best thing to say is nothing.
Stick to only these questions. Am I free to go? If stopped by law enforcement, try to leave the conversation as quickly and safely as possible.
Ask, am I free to go?
If yes, walk away calmly and quietly. Running away could give them pretext to detain you. Officers may try an incite a reaction. Ignore them. Knowing your rights is a great first step.
And asserting your rights is even better.
The Can I Kick It outdoor summer movie series presented by Shaolin Jazz is back. And it's coming to Southeast DC for the first time ever. Enjoy three nights of martial arts and action films, scored live with hip-hop, soul, and more, mixed by WPFW alum DJ Two Tone Jones. Saturday, September 20th at Skyland Town Center with the screening of Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon. Then on Saturday, October 25th, the series concludes with the screening of I'm Gonna Get You Sucker at the Capitol Hill Boys Club Artist Gallery. Each event begins at 7 p.m. with a guest DJ set, followed by the movie at 8:30 p.m. Blankets and lawn chairs are welcome. For more details, visit shaolinjazz.com. shaolinjazz.com.
Are you ready to move, groove, and exercise with the WPFW family? WPFW's annual 5K Run Walk for Total Fitness happens Saturday, September 13th from 8 a.m. till 1 p.m. This fundraiser will be held at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland. In addition to a scenic 5K trail, Fitness and wellness classes will be offered. Lively music to fuel your participation in the activities, along with water and healthy snacks, will be provided. Details are at WPFWFM.org or call 202-888-5484. There's something for everyone to enjoy. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
No social justice issue or movement can escape the spotlight of the Latino Media Collective. The Latino Media Collective delivers consequential coverage from the biggest